Ever since the collapse of Enron, the company's culture has been widely criticized for being cutthroat, arrogant. While Enron was riding high, that culture was viewed more positively than that by many people. In fact, writer Malcolm Gladwell writes in the current issue of The New Yorker that Enron epitomized an approach to hiring and management that was very trendy. It's an approach Gladwell attributes to the consulting firm McKinsey & Company. His article is called The Talent Myth. Malcolm Gladwell joins us from our New York bureau. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You contrast the way Enron hired and promoted people with Procter & Gamble as one. What's the difference?
The difference is whether you think the system is the star or whether you think individuals are the star. Procter & Gamble is a company that has existed and flourished for the better part of a century because it has a very, very strict, rigorous methodology. It has a very clear company culture and ethos. And people come and people go, but they learn the Procter & Gamble way. Enron was the exact opposite of that. They were very interested in individuals, in finding the absolute smartest individuals and giving them the maximum freedom to sort of do what they want and flourish. And, you know, it's a very self-conscious star system. In fact, McKinsey had this whole idea, which Enron took completely whole, of you divided everyone up into A, B, and C sort of employees. Mm-hmm. And your A employees were your stars, and you paid them, you know, when Enron executive famously said, we pay smart people more than they're worth. So the A people got all this money, and the C people basically got pushed out, and the B people were sort of placated.
But you take on the concept of talent here. Mm-hmm. I mean, wouldn't someone from Procter & Gamble send us an email even before we're finished speaking today saying, we do hire the very most talented, smartest people we can possibly find? What's the difference in defining the best people you can find here?
Well, it depends on what your criterion is for what talent is. At Enron, their criterion was that we should get the absolute top graduates of the absolute top schools. Now, Procter & Gamble, would they like to have those people? Sure. But their whole, I mean, many of them wouldn't go to Cincinnati to begin with to work on detergent. And secondly, I think that if you talked to someone at Procter & Gamble, they would say, you know what, we work better with people who are not so wrapped up in their own intelligence and ego and ambition. And we want people who will work as part of a team. Now, you know, I sound like a high school coach right now. But, you know, I think there is something in this that's fundamentally critical. And that is, how do you get large numbers of people to work together and create a profitable enterprise?
You invoke the phrase, I believe in the article, which one hears very commonly about creativity in business and management, thinking outside the box, which raises questions about the box.
Well, I was just, you know, that phrase was so in vogue in the latter half of the 90s. Everyone was being encouraged to think outside the box. To me, it raises the question is, you know, if you're always thinking outside the box, then maybe there's something wrong with the box. At Enron, if you read through, there are all these books that were written about how great Enron was, you know, literally months before its collapse. They're constantly celebrating themselves for how subversive their vision is, for their ability to tear up, you know, the way they did business yesterday and start afresh today. And if you're constantly doing that, then to me, that suggests there's something fundamentally wrong with your organization if you constantly have to keep reinventing it. But, you know, this taps into this larger thing. We became obsessed with the sort of ethic of individual achievement. It starts with this notion of the CEO as savior who can be paid $50 million because he alone stands between your company and financial ruin. Or, you know, and we extended it down the executive ranks, and people began to think that companies' success stood or fell on the shoulders of one or two or three key individuals. That's wrong. That's not a way to run a company.
But the attractiveness, I should think, of a system that says there are A people, B people, and C people, but not for long C people at the company, is very attractive if you say, well, I'm going to be an A-plus person and make zillions of dollars here and feel totally justified in that.
Yeah. But the underside of that is how corrosive that is, first of all, for everyone else in the company. Mm-hmm. And secondly, what this sets up is an expectation that you know, someone is talented or they aren't talented. I don't think that talent is something that can be so easily measured. The McKinsey people have this in one of the books that was written about this idea. They make the comparison to fighter pilots. And they said in the Royal Air Force in World War II did this with their fighter pilots, divide them up into A, B, and C, and treated the A's very differently. But that's flying a plane. You know, and flying a plane strikes me as something that we can agree on right now, what makes a great fighter pilot. You know, you witness how many planes you shoot down or how safely you bring your squadron back from enemy territory, et cetera, et cetera. Managing a business is not something that allows us to so kind of clearly and easily measure someone's worth or someone's ability. And that's really the problem they got into, is that they didn't have a good working definition of talent. Mm-hmm. They simply decided certain people were talented and backed them, even as these people, you know, ran up millions of dollars in losses or began to cook the books.
I couldn't help but think, as I was reading your article, of an institution like the New Yorker magazine, mm-hmm. Which requires very talented people to be writing for it. There are other publications that are really are highly formatted. And I mean, years ago, when I was growing up, in Time magazine, there was no byline. You didn't even know who wrote anything in it. There are some institutions that do require great talent. I mean, where you have to be looking for the top talent, no?
Yeah, this is not to say that, you know, intelligence isn't important. It is to say that there is more to be gained from having a strong system than we imagine. Now, to use the New Yorker example, because obviously I'm a New Yorker writer, it's a mistake to look at New Yorker writers and say that guy's a star or that woman's a star. You know, I look really good because I happen to have an extraordinary fact checker and an incredible editor, and we appear to be talented because we are the beneficiaries of this extraordinary culture.
You use some athletic metaphors in this piece. Enron mm-hmm. was looking for the great natural athletes.
Mm-hmm. It's as always, I'm a big sports fan, and I've always been fascinated with how bad a job football teams do at picking quarterbacks. Because if you look at the quarterbacks who are highly touted out of college, only a tiny percent of them actually do any good in the pros. And if you look at the people who fail, what you find is they are invariably these incredibly athletically gifted people. They're the tall ones, the guys who can run the fastest, the guys who have the strongest arm. They're these people who have all of the kind of obvious physical gifts, but none of the intangible thing that makes someone a great quarterback. There's a case where I think people also erroneously get caught up in trying to come up with some definition of talent, and they adhere to it far too strongly, and they get blinded to what it really takes to succeed in that particular position. So I think, you know, these mistakes are being made in many different spheres, not just in business.
Business Week magazine did a piece about McKinsey and Company not too long ago, which pointed out that a number of its high-profile clients have had some troubles. Do you think that the approach of McKinsey is out of fashion right now? That's one of the casualties of the current downturn, perhaps.
Yes, I do think that there are fashions in the business world just as surely as there are fashions in other in the consumer marketplace or other. And McKinsey certainly was peddling a series of ideas which seemed to make sense in the bull market of 1999, and now we sort of realize the emperor had no clothes. They were running around this country or the world holding up Enron, their star client, as the example for corporate America of how to reinvent themselves. You can't help but take a hit mm-hmm. if that's what you've been saying for the last 3 years.
Well, Malcolm Gladwell, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Malcolm Gladwell of the New Yorker magazine is the author of the article, The Talent Myth, in the current issue.